Feshkimar, Falcha Ganturus Albuquerque, welcome to Creative Scotland and our roadshow. This is, I think, number 10 of our roadshow events where we've come out and talked to people about Creative Scotland's plans. My name's Andrew Dixon, Chief Executive of Creative Scotland, and very pleased to have other members of our team here who've been doing investment surgeries this morning, Karen Dick, Brian O'Hara, and Lindsay McLeod. So do contact any of them afterwards if you have any questions. Today, I'm going to give you a bit of an overview of where Creative Scotland is going. But first of all, I wanted to talk about Creative Scotland and the culture that we're trying to develop. I don't see Creative Scotland as an institution. We see it as a rallying call, something that's shining a light on the cultural strengths of Scotland. And instead of talking about ourselves, we'll increasingly talk about the quality of the work that's happening across Scotland. I've been in Scotland just over a year, and I've had the most privileged job of going around and seeing virtually everywhere and seeing some of Scotland's cultural strengths. I've seen amazing artist residences in Salmerostig, in Orkney. I've been to some of our best festivals in Ullapool, St Magnus. I've had the opportunity to see some of the best theatre in our Made in Scotland programme in the Edinburgh Festival. I've had the opportunity to see Arts in Prisons activity, some of the work we do with Under Fives, some of the amazing projects that have been happening through the Inspiring Communities programme. I've been to print studios in Inverness, in Glasgow, in Edinburgh. I've been across the North Highlands and seen really small community-based projects that are making a difference. And this is almost the end of my tour, the Outer Hebrides. It was the one place in Scotland that I hadn't really been. And I've had a fantastic 2.5 days here visiting projects in South Uist, North Uist, and here today in Stornoway. And this fantastic venue, which I think is certainly one of the stars of the investment by the lottery in cultural projects in Scotland. I think it's just a brilliantly designed and fantastically well-managed and run operation. So delighted to hold this event here today at Atlanta. This final image on my presentation is of a theatre company called Lung Ha. And Lung Ha is a theatre company that works with people with learning difficulties. And this particular show, Around the World in 80 Days, had about 20 performers in it and was one of the highest quality theatre productions that I've seen in this sort of genre of working with people with disabilities. And I think it's great that in Scotland we can celebrate this sort of work and have this sort of work in the Edinburgh Festival as part of our 17 theatre and dance productions made in Scotland, alongside work of other great theatre and dance producers, Scottish Dance Theatre and others. And as I've gone round Scotland, what's struck me more than anything else is the untold stories of our success in festivals, of our work in artist residences, of the fantastic venues, of the Youth Music Initiative and the delivery that it's made. So what Creative Scotland is going to be about is trying to tell those stories. And to our brand is about shining a light, literally, through the window of our brand on cultural success in Scotland. So today I'm going to talk about Creative Scotland, what we've been doing, our progress. I'll tell you a little bit about the plan and the context for our plan. I'm going to try and explain our budget in a few minutes and say a bit about the partners that Creative Scotland has to work with and explain in a little bit of detail our investment programmes. Creative Scotland, as many of you know, is a new organisation brought together the Scottish Arts Council and Scottish Screen. It's an organisation that was given the brief for the arts, for screen and film, but also for coordinating activity around the creative industries in Scotland and international export, cultural export. It is a new organisation, brand new organisation. We've got a new board, new senior team. Venu Duper, pictured here, is one of our three directors of creative development. The other two are Ian Munro, who joined us from the Scottish Arts Council, and Caroline Parkinson. Venu does our work on cultural production, Caroline Parkinson on film, creative industries and music, and Ian Munro, our work in education, access, audience development, and the participatory agenda. We've streamlined our staffing. If you find that there aren't people there that you once knew, there will be some gaps for a while, because we've gone down from having 155 staff at its peak in the two organisations to around 90 staff. We will be recruiting one or two people back, but as a result of this, we've managed to make savings and our move to our new office. We've made savings now of some £2 million, and we've been able to plough all of that back into our cultural spend. We've moved to a new resource base in Edinburgh at Waverley Gate, and if any of you are in Edinburgh, do feel free to call in. It's your facility. It's got meeting spaces, it's got Wi-Fi, it's got hot desk facilities, and we host various events there. And perhaps our biggest achievement to date has been maintaining our budget from the Scottish Government in the midst of the biggest public sector cuts that I think we've seen for many years. And when I compare what happened across the border in England, where the Arts Council of England has suffered 30% cuts in its budget, that really is a major achievement for the Scottish Government to have maintained our budget. One of the things that we've been trying to do is to shift this focus to being more of a champion and advocate. And I talk about looking out of the window. Our team at Creative Scotland will talk much more about cultural projects that they've seen and try to put the emphasis on the work that's happening. We've been doing a lot of work in the first year that has been hidden. It's been about positioning ourselves with government, with senior ministers, with opposition parties, work with the press, who are very important partners, and positioning ourselves to work with other key agencies. But we've also been doing one or two new things, trying to package things together. As I was going around Scotland, I found artist residences everywhere, and I came back to the office and asked how many artist residences we had. And we didn't know at the time, but we had 57 artist residences in different places in Scotland, but they were all hidden away and unconnected. So we've invested £1 million additional into artist residencies. We've called it Creative Futures, and we're going to connect those artists together. We're going to hopefully hold an event that brings those that want to come together together. We're going to ask somebody to help promote the work that all those residencies are delivering. And we're going to keep in touch with those artists, because they become 150 artists this year, 300 by 2 years, and so on. And we build an alumni of artists who have been through a Creative Futures programme. We've invested some additional money in film to leverage more film production in Scotland. And we produced this guide, the Guide to Scottish Festivals. I was working in Newcastle Gateshead, about an hour across the border, and I ran festivals and events. And I knew of about seven or eight festivals in Scotland reasonably well. But again, when I arrived, I asked for a list of festivals in Scotland, and somebody gave me a list of 38 festivals. And then in my first week, I went to three that weren't even on the list. And what we then did was to establish a partnership with The List, magazine publishers, and have produced the first ever guide to Scottish festivals, 280 cultural festivals a year in Scotland, 150 music festivals, 40 literature festivals, 75 festivals in the winter, when in theory we're not really marketing Scotland for tourism. And this has been a very powerful tool of showing how Creative Scotland can add value. We may only put money into 50 to 100 of those festivals, but we can help the rest by the promotion. And we're working with Visit Scotland and Event Scotland to expand this in future years. We've been doing a lot of showcasing. We showcase music at Celtic Connections, theatre at IETM. Recently been to Venice with Carla Black, one of our top Scottish artists, at the Venice International Biennale. And we've been showcasing music at South by Southwest, and some of you may have seen a programme on BBC, I don't know if it was last night or the night before, featuring the work of some of our musicians. But a lot of what we've been doing has been preparing the ground. We've been reviewing our foundation organisations, of which Atlanta is one. We've been looking at those as really kind of strong building blocks for the future, but asking which are the right organisations to go forward with as foundation organisations, and are some of those organisations better suited to different types of investment? We've been doing some work around an economic impact study. It's really important that we've got the statistics and the messages to promote the value of culture in Scotland. So we're going to do a Scotland-wide economic impact study. It builds on some of the work that's been done in different places, but tries to have a common methodology about the economic impact of culture. We've been surveying where our international partnerships are. Again, as I travelled around, I was finding everywhere I went there was relationships between a theatre company or a music festival and somewhere else internationally, but nobody had really pulled together the picture of what that international map looked like. And to inform the way we work in the future, we've mapped our international partnerships. And we've started to put in place a series of partnerships with broadcasters. Broadcasters are really important partners for Creative Scotland, and for the first time as an organisation, we can talk about film, we can talk about the arts, we can talk about digital content, we can talk about education. So our partnerships with the BBC, with MG Alba, with STV, with Channel 4 and with Sky Arts are going to be really important tools in us helping reach the population of Scotland and beyond. We've also been attracting some new money in, so we've got a partnership with the Paul Hamlin Foundation that's going to be supporting artist training, particularly working in education. We've also got some money from the Baring Foundation for 3 years for an Arts and Older People's Festival, a national festival of arts and older people. And we've been doing various policy work. So our work with a thing called the Education and the Arts Creativity Action Plan, that's a snappy title, has been about positioning the cultural work that we're doing in the context of education policy in Scotland, ensuring that culture plays its part in the curriculum for excellence. And part of that work has been looking at how we expand a thing called the GLOW Network. For those of you who don't know it, is we input about 100 cultural organisations input to a creativity portal that reaches every school. And there's some really amazing work happening through that. A live authors event by Scottish Book Trust has taken live authors to 400,000 school children in Scotland in the last year. And this is really quite powerful numbers and very high quality work. And SCIP is our work in the creative industries, working in partnership with HIE, with Scottish Enterprise, with the Skills and Funding Councils for Education, to look at how we best marshal the investment of different agencies to support creative industries. I just put this slide in, linked to the Baring Foundation, the Arts and Older People, and one of the things that's really struck me as I've gone around Scotland is there's some things we're extremely good at, and one of the areas is developing arts with older people. And given that 50% of the population, including me, is going to be over 50 within a few years' time, this is a really important area of the population for us to serve. So on to our plan. Well, we were required to produce a three-year plan by the government. But if you're going to create this rallying call for people to get behind, you need a longer-term vision. So we decided to set the plan in the context of a 10-year vision or a set of aspirational statements which people can feel they can get behind in some way. And I'll share some of those with you, and you can read the detail in the plan afterwards. And the other thing that we've done with the plan is moved to be much more transparent in what we do. We had over 100 published budgets and in the past, and there was sort of £20,000 in that drawer and £40,000 in that cupboard, and nobody quite knew where they were. That was in the organisation, let alone externally. So we've streamlined our investment programmes now to just 15, much more straightforward, hopefully, investment programmes. And we've made this shift from being a funding body to an investment agency. And we use the word investment very deliberately because if you look in the dictionary, investment isn't just about money. It's about something that's worth investing time, energy, and resources to. part of our investment is that advocacy, that championing, the advice that we can give cultural projects. And investment's a much more positive word than subsidy or grants. So just to give you a flavour of some of the 10-year aspirations, and you can read the detail, Scotland as a year-round festival nation recognised as one of the top 10 places in the world to visit for culture. I think we are already there, but we need to articulate that, and we need to find a way of celebrating our best festivals, of using the fact we have 280 festivals, but that we also have really distinctive cultural festivals to attract more visitors to Scotland, not just as tourists, but also to participate and engage with and be part of those festivals. Scotland having the highest levels of participation in the UK and creativity reaching into every home. The good news is the survey says that we do have very high levels of participation and engagement in many parts of Scotland, but there are big areas, both urban deprivation, rural isolation, older people, certain sectors of the population, where there aren't the levels of participation and engagement that we should aspire to. So we've set ourselves this as a target to work to. And the third one I just wanted to focus on is Scotland recognised as an international leader for arts, children and young people. We have some amazing children's theatre companies, people like Visible Fictions, Catherine Wheels. We have some really innovative work happening in the arts and children and young people. If you look at the Fashion movement and 32,000 young people last year taking part in the Fashion movement, I think there's over 50 now Fashies in Scotland. If you look at the Youth Music Initiative, 7 years of government investment into youth music, this is creating generational change. And if we can build on that, I genuinely believe that we can be recognised internationally for the strength of our work with children and young people. So our objectives are quite simple. Invest in talent, invest in quality production, invest in audiences' access and participation, invest in the cultural economy, and invest in places. And I'm just going to say a bit about each of those in a minute. But we're also have three cross-cutting priorities to look at our international work, to ensure that we have equalities at the heart of everything that we do, and to underpin everything with education, and to find a better use of our resources and cultural organisations' work in delivering education activity. As a new organisation, our board were very keen to establish the values of the organisation, and this is what they came up with. Passionate, committed, creative, committed to the principles of equality, and the key ones really, proud to be rooted in Scotland but with a global perspective, so very much seeing ourselves rooted in Scotland, but looking beyond our borders in terms of where we take work and where we bring work from. And determined to be distinctive, bold, and take risks. We had a lot of debate about taking risks, but we will get behind things and take risks. And then to embed that, you need some principles of how the organisation is going to work and what it's there for. And the first one of these is really important. There's always a debate about whether an arts council or a cultural agency is there to serve the artists or to serve the population. And we're very clear, we are driven by a commitment to the people of Scotland first and foremost. Artists and creative practitioners will absolutely be central to delivering that and at the heart of our thinking, but our focus is on delivering a commitment to the people of Scotland. A couple of other things I want to highlight here. We'll tend to work in partnership, in collaboration with others where we can, but sometimes we'll just take the lead and we'll do something if there's nobody else there to do it. And providing leadership, whether it's from Creative Scotland or giving other agencies leadership roles within Scotland, is really important. I think a strong cultural nation is a nation that's got strong cultural leaders within the cultural sector, within cultural organisations. We're trying to streamline bureaucracy to slim things down and make it easier for people to get investment from us. And the final point, you know, we're very committed to our staff. Our staff are not just there to take decisions about funding, they're there to provide advice, to be champions for the sector, to give advice and to help promote culture in Scotland. So, a word about our objectives. The first one is investing in talent. And I want to tell you about this. I went to see a show in the Fringe by Frank McConnell's company, A Wee Home From Home. And in the programme for this show, instead of having the CVs of all the actors and saying, you know, so-and-so had performed three times in Taggart and Michael Marr has performed on tour at so-and-so, they had this, which is basically the career paths of the choreographer, Frank McConnell, the director, Jerry Mulgrew, the performers, the designer, and so on. And as soon as I saw it, I realised this is our job. This is our job, not just for Creative Scotland, but for the cultural sector as a whole. Because what it's about is identifying the ways that we get young people engaged with the arts and onto a track, either to be a participant or a career track, that we find the stations or the platforms where talent is added, the places where people come together and create work, add to their skill base, and then move on somewhere else. That we look and see where are the platforms missing? Where are the stations missing? How do we enable people to move off on the tracks internationally? And how do we get the best artists and performers back into Scotland at the peaks of their career? And this became a very powerful image in terms of describing our role to politicians and others. And we've featured it very visually in the plan because this is how we're thinking. Which are the foundation organisations that we need in here? Where are there agencies that don't exist that we need to deliver particular services or move things forward? And you lay that geographically over Scotland as well as by art form, and you start to get a much more strategic approach to how an agency like ourselves will engage with the whole ecology of culture in Scotland. Investing in quality artistic production is where we spend most of our money. We spend most of our money on theatre companies, on dance companies, on visual arts production. That's what takes up the lion's share of our investment. But we need to recognise the things that we're good at and build on those strengths, and also some things that we're not so good at, and either decide to try and improve them or to move on and say, actually, that's something that Scotland will never be particularly strong in. So within the plan, we've started a debate really about what is Scotland strong in, which are the areas we should build on, which are the things that perhaps are not going to be, never going to be major strengths for Scotland. Audiences, access and participation. Given that commitment to the people of Scotland, this has to be a really important objective for us. But we need to decide where we're going to target our resources. If we scatter our investment everywhere and try to do everything, we may not achieve as much as if we're really focused. Should we focus on the under fives as a next generation? Should we focus on areas of particular disadvantage? Should we focus or have an increased focus on arts and older people, given it's going to be 50% of the population? Should we focus on those geographical areas where there's less participation, less engagement with the arts? Those are the questions we're trying to answer. And I think the key to it is to pilot activities that can then have an impact and be picked up in other ways. So we did some work funded by the Scottish Arts Council in prisons, five prisons, working with offenders, taking some of our best theatre companies, Scottish Opera and others, into prisons. This work is proving that if you engage prisoners with culture, they end up spending less time in prison. They're therefore costing Scotland less because of that cultural engagement. If we can prove that it then stops them reoffending, it'll save Scotland even more money. And that pilot, that sort of pilot project, which was quite a heavy investment, could in the long term lead to the Justice Department of Scotland investing in culture as one of its main approaches to tackling crime and reoffending. That's the sort of pilot activity which we'll get involved in. The cultural economy. I think one or two people were worried that Creative Scotland was going to be an economic development agency and only interested in the creative industries. We're not. We're really social investment is as important as economic investment. But you look at all the political documents and all the manifestos in the recent election, and it was about the economy, it was about jobs, it was about creating employment, it's about sustainable tourism. So we will take an interest in the sustainability of cultural organisations, in which parts of the creative industries we can create more employment, more jobs, in how we help new business startups, how we develop our creative industries internationally, how we promote our work for export. So that's the sort of territory we're in. We don't have a lot of money for creative industries work, which I'll explain later, but we can coordinate the activity of lots of other agencies. And finally, this is some language which maybe surprised people. Our final objective is to invest in places and the contribution that they make to a creative Scotland. And as I travel around Scotland, from Dumfries to Shetland, every place I've been has been making a distinctive contribution through its culture to Scotland as a creative nation. And we feel we need to spend more of our time looking at the contribution that, that individual islands, that local authority areas, that parts of Scotland make, and to celebrate the difference rather than to try and get everybody to do the same. What is it about Dumfries and Galloway that is their cultural strength? It's a place with a huge number of resident artists. It's actually one of the most used places for film sets in Scotland, mainly horror films, actually. Surprising given the landscape. It's a kind of border and it's a gateway. It's got some quite famous historic artists. How do you capture those cultural contributions of Dumfries and Galloway and describe it within Scotland as a whole? Likewise, here in the Western Isles, what are the unique contributions that the Western Isles make to a creative nation? I mean, I think they're very obvious to people who live here, but they're maybe not as obvious to Scotland as a whole. And one of the things we're saying is that geography matters, and we're being very open. We put this map in of where our regularly funded organisations are based, and we're very proud of our investment in Edinburgh, in the festivals. The festivals are really important as a showcase for work, whether that's visual arts, music, theatre, dance. We're very proud of the production base of Glasgow and the heavy investment there in media and film. We're actually pretty pleased by our investment in the Highlands and the Western Isles. We have a lot of strong cultural organisations now here, and that's thanks to a number of people in this room that over the years have developed organisations and built their strengths, made buildings like this happen, developed inspirational projects. Malky's work in Gaelic in doing really ambitious projects that have left a legacy. But there are huge areas of Scotland, the Borders, Moray, the Ayrshire, where we really don't have the cultural infrastructure. And we're not going to rob Peter to pay Paul, but we are going to ask how can we help some of those areas that don't have as much infrastructure and investment. So onto our budget. A few principles. We're going to have fewer budgets. We're trying to plan over 3 years, although we only got 1 year settlement from the government. We're trying to create clarity between our lottery funding and our government funding. We're getting rid of all art form budgets apart from film, so all our budgets are cross art form. And we're trying to be much more transparent and open. We will devolve quite a lot of money, and I'll explain later where we're devolving money to. So this is our budget, and it's very visual, and you don't need to see the detail. But when we sat down as a new team and tried to work out what was happening with the budget, we couldn't really see how the predecessor organisations had come to where they'd come to with the budget and how these little pockets of money of 20,000 and 40,000 had occurred. So we started afresh, and we drew 70 squares on a wall, and each square was £1 million. And we thought we'd have about £70 million. We've ended up with £75 million. And we started to put the building blocks together of what each square was being spent on. So the purple money is our money from the government. It's £35 million that we get each year. But a huge amount of that is committed. So £18 million goes to organisations in our foundations programme, places like Atlanta, P&E, Tykershiva. £7 million goes to a set of organisations called flexibly funded organisations. Heb Celt is one of those. And we'd got actually very little left within the government's money, a very small amount, the dark purple on the right-hand side there. And even after reducing our overheads by £2 million, there was this relatively small amount left. And what that was trying to do was to invest in lots of different things, in access education, in artists, in festivals, in all sorts of things. And it was trying to do lots of things with lots of small budgets. And we decided it was stronger tactically to concentrate that money on individuals and talents. So that money is there for artist residencies, individuals, talent, training, skills. So we can say to the government, actually, this is what your money buys. This is what your money currently buys. The money in the red is money that the government gives us for a particular purpose. £10 million for the Youth Music Initiative. We can only spend it on youth music. And it's very welcome, but it's only for music. Some money for the Edinburgh Festival's Expo Fund for international promotion of Scottish work produced in Scotland. Some money for creative industries, the Innovation Fund. And some money for cashback for communities. This is work preventing crime in communities affected by crime. And the blue money at the top is our lottery budget. And you can see all the detail of this in the plan. And with the lottery budget, we literally built the squares, and we actually built them over 3 years. So we've planned that budget over 3 years. And we've tried to do it in a way that invites people to have conversations with us about a range of things that they can contribute to a creative Scotland. So just to show you, in summary, our core treasury money, big part of it, all the purple stuff is committed day one of Creative Scotland arriving. The light purple money we will move away from, and we won't make commitments in the future. We'll be changing that programme. But the blue money is our flexible money there within the Treasury. We get all this other money for specific purposes from the government. And then we have the lottery. And the really good news, though I'm not shouting too loud about it in front of government officials, is our lottery income is growing. And it's growing for three reasons. Firstly, you're spending more money on winning the lottery. It's remarkable in a recession, people are spending more money on lottery tickets. Actually, the lottery is being very well run by Camelot. Secondly, we're getting the money back that was taken away from us from the Olympics. And that starts to come back into our budget after 2012. And thirdly, the UK government has reinstated the original shares that it gave to the arts and heritage. And so that puts us back up in 2 years' time to our original percentage levels. And what that's enabled us to do at Creative Scotland is to think longer term and to build budgets over three, or in some cases, 4 years. So you'll see on the left here, our investment in film and TV is going up from, it was £2 million in Scottish Green, it's gone to £3 million this year, and we've taken it up to £3.75 million in the third year. Our investment in quality production, project activity, we're gradually increasing over the next 3 years. In fact, those figures are even higher than in this presentation now, because we got some additional lottery income projected even on top of these budgets. We've put money aside for a capital programme. Over 4 years, we'll invest £20 million. It's not a huge amount, but it will help a number of capital projects to happen, hopefully respond to requests for things like this building to have digital projection, hopefully improve some of our existing facilities as well as building some new ones. And on the far side of the budget, special events. 2012 has been designated as the Year of Creative Scotland, as a themed year. It's building on the homecoming. And so we've got this amazing opportunity to do something that celebrates the creativity of Scotland next year. And we've put aside the best part of £5 million spread over 2 years to invite proposals, and we'll be announcing the detail of that within the next few weeks. Likewise, 2014 is the Commonwealth Games, and Creative Scotland's charged with putting together the cultural programme for the Commonwealth Games nationally. So we'll be, again, inviting people to come forward within a framework to deliver projects for the Commonwealth Games. One of the, without giving away the detail of it, one of the projects we're going to do is creative towns, creative places, and inviting places to come forward and make their contribution during those years. Now on to partnership. People perhaps think of Creative Scotland or Arts Council as mainly dealing with artists or cultural organisations. And we wanted to put this in our plan because if we're creating a rallying call about getting lots of other agencies to work with us, people need to see the breadth of the picture of the partners that we work with. We work with government agencies, 32 local authorities. We work with lots of development agencies, Cultural Enterprise Office, Highlands and Islands Enterprise, Scottish Enterprise. We work with the film and media sector, really important partners to us, as are the press, actually. And I really want to get the press thinking more positively about culture in Scotland. It's of no use the press criticising culture in Scotland. We want them to be partners with us in a festival of arts and older people, the Daily Express, partners with us in celebrating the Made in Scotland programme, the Herald, the Scotsman. Finding ways that the press can actually be actively involved is critical. International partners, education partners, charities that might partner with us, other national cultural partners. It's a complex picture, and the key to this job for Creative Scotland is to find the right relationships with all these agencies, because that will strengthen our work as just one part of the jigsaw. Some work that we've currently got in progress. We're doing a youth arts review. We're asked to do that by the government. I've mentioned the economic impact study, the foundation review. We're working with various partners in this room and others on the National Gaelic Arts and Media Strategy, and I think that's progressing well. We've put our new investment programmes out, and they're now up on our website and very clear. And we're still doing work internally, completing our staff team. We've just appointed somebody in the creative industries. We've just appointed somebody as Director of Communications. And we've still got one or two gaps. And our website, we've just got a temporary website at the moment. It's just a sort of holding site. There's nothing sophisticated about it at all. But the two words, Creative Scotland, are driving a huge number of visitors to our site. And when we launch the proper website, the full website, at the end of October, I think this is going to be a really powerful portal for people to work with. We've had instances where, you know, we've posted something on Facebook or on our website, and a cultural organisation has had a massive burst in visitors to their own websites and activity. We've engaged in tweeting and other things. And the other week, Stephen Fry tweeted something for Creative Scotland about the Scottish Book Awards to 3 million people. New technology is going to be really important to how we get the message across about Creative Scotland. So some next steps. We're going to do some reviews. So remember the map of the tram lines, the career paths. We're going to do reviews of theatre, of music and visual arts this year and really start to understand what agencies we've got, where are the gaps, what do we commission in the future. We'll then change our investment programmes, so we're doing much more strategic commissioning, trying to decide how many theatre companies we need in Scotland, what type of theatre company. Could we have a commission for a theatre company that specialised in Gaelic and Scots? Could we have a commission for a theatre company that specifically specified that it had to work in larger scale venues? At the moment, we don't have a match between the work that's produced and the venues that exist in Scotland, and we've got to be more strategic in doing that. One of the other new things we've introduced is a thing called the Ideas Bank. We want to avoid people wasting time and, you know, putting in detailed applications. If they've got an idea and they want to test it out, they can just email us, and we have a group of people who sit down and look at the ideas and feed back on them and then maybe advise them where to go next. We're trying to be more generic in our advice. I think a number of people here this morning have been to our investment surgeries, where people like Karen and Brian and others in the team can give advice about everything. Whereas in the past, you'd have had to go and talk to five different officers. Hopefully in the future, we'll have gateways where people can direct you to the right place in the organisation. I'm not going to go through this in any great detail. These are the investment programmes that are in the plan. And all of it's available on our website with much simplified forms. But I want to say a bit about the other funds. We do want to devolve more of our money so that we can concentrate on raising money and being advocates and champions. So we devolve money to Awards for All for grants under £10,000, largely voluntary organisations, and that's run by the Big Lottery Fund. Starter for Six is a business startup programme run by the Cultural Enterprise Office for us, £250,000. Arts and Business manage the business leverage fund, which is basically matches new investors by investments by sponsors. Bordner Gallic and Brian have a modest development budget that's going to support small-scale strategic developments in Gallic, trying to get organisations to perhaps engage with Gallic arts activity for the first time. And that's a very simple process of putting forward ideas and proposals. Youth Music Initiative, you may not realise, but we devolve £8 million of that to local authorities. So this area gets about £97,000 a year. And that's money just spent on tuition in schools. We also have £2 million that we manage, but even with that, we devolve some of it to informal-based education activity. And then Creative Futures is the residency programme, where we're going to devolve quite a lot of money to residency hosts, so they take the decisions about which residencies happen, and it's not a case of Creative Scotland deciding, you know, which writers are appointed or which musicians are appointed. The plan was released in March. We had to release it quite quickly before the elections. We didn't do a big, you know, launch in any way, but I've been out on the road and we've talked to over 1,000 people at events like this. And we've had some fantastic reaction back on it. And this is just a few things that came back from organisations. And I think, if anything, it's the clarity in the plan that people have really welcomed, and the more positive, aspirational nature of that 10-year vision. And that 10-year vision, we are consulting on. If we've not got it right, you know, we've got 10 years to change it. So if we've not quite got those statements right, we will change them. You know, we're keen to continue to hear any feedback, either positive or negative, about the plan. So some key messages. I want to stress this, here to serve the population of Scotland. One of the questions we're asking everybody, local authorities, artists, cultural organisations, how can you contribute to a Creative Scotland? And we use the Creative Scotland with a small c a lot in the plan. Ultimately, that is the question. Everybody's got a contribution to make. Another key message is, this is a marathon, not a sprint. The plan's got lots of big ambitions in it. We can't do them all tomorrow. There'll be some new ideas which we don't bring on for 2 or 3 years. Do have some patience with us. We won't be able to launch everything at once. We're very keen on working with partners and hearing new ideas. And we want to have conversation and collaboration rather than application and rejection. Conversations, single conversations where possible, rather than multiple conversations. And we want you to help us celebrate Scotland's creative achievements. I've said this in a number of places. I don't think it's the case here in the Western Isles, but in parts of Scotland, there's almost an inbuilt cultural resistance to celebrating success. If we're going to get the message across about Scotland's cultural success, we have to have everybody talking about the success stories, shining a light on the cultural activity. We need your images. We need the stories of individuals who've been changed through the arts. We need the really good ideas coming forward all the time. So let us know about your success stories. Help us raise the ambition and help us try and put creativity into the very core script of Scotland. I'm really excited. The Scottish Government is developing a creativity initiative within the civil service. But could we, if we're going to be one of the world's most creative nations, which again is one of our aspiration statements, what other agencies could we encourage to put creativity at the heart of their work? Creativity within the environmental projects, creativity within our heritage, creativity within our education systems. So thanks very much for coming along. I'm going to stop there and take some question and answers. It's been an absolute privilege to be toured around the last few days in South Uist, North Uist, and here. And I'm really excited about coming back. It was actually, I was telling Roddy, the first thing that went in my diary on February the 12th last year when I was appointed to the job was to come to Stornoway for Hebkelt. And I was really sorry I couldn't come last year. I'm sorry again I can't come this year. But it's been a long-awaited visit, but it's been well worth it. And I'm looking forward to coming back. So thank you very much. Tap Alive.
Hello, 1, 2. 1, 2. Anyway, you probably
can we bring the lights up a little bit if somebody
grabs. We're gonna have some questions and answers, so I'm sure many of you have questions. We don't have an awful lot of time, we're running slightly behind, so if you can say who you are and keep your question distinct, and we'll Andrew will try and answer it quickly too, and we'll get as many as we can in. So Kisht again, you simbi. Anyone have any question? Questions. Was the presentation so good? Yes. Taplath.
One of the things I noticed on the London Underground map was that literature didn't seem to figure. You had various theatre venues, various music venues. Okay, I know literature is something different. And when I say literature, I'm not just talking about creative writing, I'm talking about poetry. The whole gamut, and I accept that you're putting things in more general budgets. You're not going to have a literature budget anymore or anything like that. But it does occur to me, if you're going to work with partners, to what degree are you involving Scottish publishers as partners? Yeah, well, I'm thinking in terms of potential subsidy, what publishers would call subsidy funding, these sort of areas.
Okay, well, first of all, I mean, the map, we agreed with Frank McConnell we could copy the map from their programme. So that was just the career paths of five performers in theatre, in theatre and dance. But the principle is that we could do that map for literature and look at the career paths of writers, the festivals that they've engaged with, the publishers that exist, Publishing Scotland, other commercial publishers that exist in Scotland. And we need to draw that map for literature and to understand where there are gaps and what is happening to writers, how important are certain festivals to people's careers, what are the learning opportunities. One of the great things I think we can do is join up the promotion of Scotland as a place to learn through culture, and let's find in terms of literature where the learning opportunities are, where the festivals, the residential centres, the universities, the colleges that have quality literature programmes. So what we're trying to do is over a period of years to take on the mapping of each of these sectors. Now, we've actually left literature to the third year because there's just been a piece of work commissioned on literature, and we want to leave a little bit of time for that to bed down. But the same principle applies, and publishers are important. They're the theatre companies of literature in some ways. They're the places where work comes out. But we need to understand whether it's traditional publishers or new digital publishers. What are the agencies we need for the future?
Tablat, next question.
I'm John Cairns from Open Book and the Highlands Islands Theatre Network and Voluntary Arts Scotland. Can you talk a bit about your commitment to the voluntary arts sector across Scotland and to the networks and organisations that support that?
Voluntary sector, critically important. You know, I was in South Uist earlier this week, and massive network of volunteers there making an event happen and welcoming visitors. Running a major cultural residential event. So volunteers are very important. The voluntary arts is also very important to us, particularly in those ambitions of reaching highest levels of participation in the UK. An awful lot of activity is voluntary activity. A lot of our youth music activity is voluntary activity, sometimes with a professional input to help improve the quality of learning experience. We've put aside within our access budgets about $250,000, I think, to specifically move forward some initiatives in the voluntary arts. And we want to make sure that we do that in partnership with the right agencies. But again, it's a story that's not been told, John, the level of volunteering that goes on. And it's not just about the music societies or the amateur theatre groups. I was in Thurso last Wednesday and a Mill Theatre Company where there's three or four local people who are running a theatre, a venue, a youth theatre, an amateur company. It's not just about those. It's about the vast number of volunteers that are making teas, that are hosting visitors and that side of things. It's maybe another area we need to map.
Nahish, next question. Bishop Juge. Thank you. There's a microphone coming down.
Dennis Malone, I run the European Commission programme for the Highlands and Islands. Your funding from the government must come with a price tag in terms of sustaining employment and generating additional jobs. Do you have that as a target in your corporate strategy, increasing employment, particularly in remote rural areas where these types of jobs are?
Yeah, we do. Essentially, there's 14 government outcomes, and we were asked to identify which of the 14 Creative Scotland would particularly deliver against. And the reality is, to one extent or another, we're doing work in all 14 areas of the government's outcomes. But we've picked five in particular, and one of those is about the economy and jobs. One of the reasons we're going to do the economic impact study and try and do it very thoroughly is we need a benchmark. There have been bits of studies done on Edinburgh festivals, on Glasgow as a city, on Orkney. We need to get a common benchmark so that we can measure over 5 years whether we're making a difference in jobs. So that will be. The government hasn't set as a target, but within our plan, we've committed to establishing a target once we've got the benchmark in place. So I think it is going to be important. But you look at a place like this. I think it's 38 full-time equivalent jobs employed in this organisation in a town the size of Stornoway. That's not an insignificant employer. And we need to tell the story of what our current investment is doing, and then say how can we increase it and where can our investment make a difference. Cultural tourism, I kind of touched on, but. Perhaps in the past, the Arts Council and Scottish Green haven't looked at their work in terms of cultural tourism. I think that is a bit of a steer that we've got from the government, that they would quite welcome Creative Scotland, not stepping on the toes or doing anything that duplicates the work of Visit Scotland or Event Scotland, but looking at a more strategic approach to cultural tourism. And you'll see one or two things starting to emerge in that, where we give money for economic reasons rather than artistic reasons.
Next question. Muriel, is there a microphone?
Hi, it's Muriel Ann McLeod from Rural Nations and the Highlands and Islands Theatre Network. We've kind of seen a shift here in what you've been presenting about investment to artists living or to communities in rural places. And I would say, having worked for many years trying to develop work in the Western Isles, this is a really kind of exciting proposal. But I'm kind of wondering how you're going to monitor that and how these decisions are made, because for many years you might make very effective work in rural places, but it not really be seen or known about. So initiatives that make the rest of Scotland aware of what's been made in rural places are great, but it's the nitty of gritty of how that's going to be done and how the actual investment decisions are going to be made, because you need a knowledge of the place to make these decisions, if you see what I'm saying.
Well, a number of questions in there. It's a bit like the jobs question. How do we really measure this? And the other big piece of measurement we'll be doing is with the Taking Part survey, which really does capture levels of both attendance at the arts and then participation. And we monitor that. When I come out to the Highlands or Western Isles, I've got my statistics on whether it's 65%, 72% of the population that's engaging with the arts. So we've got a benchmark there, and we can measure whether particular interventions are moving that over time. But these things take time to measure and move. How will we know good things in places? We won't have people just sitting in Edinburgh. I mean, I can't tell you how many miles I've travelled over the last year, but although our base will be in Edinburgh, we're very committed to understanding places, and we've actually divided the geography of Scotland up between our senior team, our three directors of creative development, each have a third, and the next stage is actually to identify our portfolio managers with a place as well, so that they get a greater in-depth understanding across art forms of places. So typically our portfolio manager might be a portfolio manager for dance, festivals and the Lothians, or music, intellectual property and the Western Isles. So we're going to make sure there's people that really understand places. And well, Brian knows, I just keep talking maps, geography, putting the tent pegs out around the edges of Scotland so that those poles in the middle stand up for Glasgow and Edinburgh, and you can be proud of them. But we're actually doing things everywhere else. At the moment, there's some really strong tent pegs here. There's some weak guy ropes down in the borders. And we need to understand, why that is, and have people that understand what the cultural context is in the borders.
Maybe just one or two more questions, if there are any.
My name is Marissa MacDonald. I work with the Gaelic Arts Agency. It was just really a clarification from yourself on something you said about the Gaelic Arts Strategy Fund, small Gaelic Arts Strategy Fund. Did you actually say that it was specifically for the introduction of other organisations into Gaelic?
It's both. I'll let Brian answer that in more detail, probably, because he manages it.
We call it the Gaelic Leverage Fund, and it's for strategic projects, new projects coming on board, but to encourage organisations across Scotland to partnership with current Gaelic arts agencies or organisations. There's some of the work that we're working on, for example, is setting up a National Gaelic Boys Choir. And for the first time, NICOS, the National Youth Choir of Scotland, they're engaging with Gaelic. There's, for example, the Book Trust. The Scottish Book Trust have asked, they have a book bug program for children 0 to 3 years old. And they want to develop a CD, for example, that will have Gaelic, Scots and English on it, and they want 60,000 of those CDs across Scotland every year. So those are the type of things that we're investing in. It'll be some of the projects are local, some of them are national, some of them possibly international, but we take them on a case-by-case basis.
Okay,
another question.
Thanks. Just one final point then for me. There are very, very few organisations in the public sector in Scotland that are actually getting increased amounts of money. I worry about the strength of the guy ropes in an environment which is changing quite significantly across Scotland, where many of the organisations that you see as your partners are actually struggling now for
yeah.
resources. How are you going to respond to that?
Well, probably the biggest challenge, Dennis, is local authorities and the pressures that local authorities, because they are the biggest spender on culture in Scotland, far greater than ourselves, may not be the biggest spender into some of our cultural organisations that we support, but it's a very difficult situation for us. What Creative Scotland won't do is go in and replace money that's been cut by local authorities. What we're trying to do is to reward good leverage and good investment. So, the fact that the funding for this building has been maintained this year by the council, it has been a real strength for Anlanta going through our foundation review. The fact that in Dundee, the local authority has increased its resources into two of our foundation organisations has been a real strength. So we want to kind of celebrate those things. But we've got to recognise some things are going to fall, some things are going to close, and make sure that we try and make cultural organisations more sustainable. I didn't go into it in any great detail, but we do have a investment programme called Cultural Economy, and a strand of that is about looking at the sustainability of cultural organisations. Are there things that we could do in different ways of investment that help them with their longer-term sustainability, testing out endowment funding, for example, testing out crowdsourced online giving and philanthropy, looking at whether, you know, an intervention of digital projection here can have an ongoing impact on the bottom line of running the venue. So that's some of the territory we're in. The other difficult area is enterprise. And both Scottish Enterprise and HIE have had very significant cuts. And I think we're fortunate that HIE remains very committed to culture, both from an economic and a social perspective. Scottish Enterprise still says it's committed, but you know, when it's faced with the cuts it's got, it's very difficult to get new investment programmes in there. So that's one of the biggest challenges. I think what we've got to do is show with really strong case studies the impact that culture can have. You know, that TV programme, the BBC on South by Southwest, is a really great tool for showing how this kind of international showcasing work, investment in culture as a creative business, can make a difference. We need to do the same in film, we need to do the same in other sectors. At the moment, we're a bit of a lone act on investing in film in Scotland, and we don't have enough investment in film to really make a difference.
Kashma, I think that's possibly enough unless there's any pressing questions that need to be answered. Okay, we'll close this part.
Okay, well, thanks very much everyone for coming along. As we've done these roadshows, we've wanted to have a bit of creativity within them.